Hello, and welcome to episode 37 of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast. Bosko and the Blues. The Bosko in the title of this episode is one Bosko Jankovic, a player whose name will be familiar to those in the northeast of England due to his spell at Middlesbrough. But this episode will, of course, go over his spell in the centre of Bosnia and one particular day at the JNA. It would also be one of those rare title contests that went right to the wire as Crvena Zvezda bounced back. The title race in question is that of the 1971-72 First League, as Crvena Zvezda and Zeljestnikar went on a ding-dong battle throughout the season, and the season would end with two major changes at Hajduk that would go on to define much of the rest of the decade. So to start with the last of those, Hajduk's defence of their title, it's fair to say, didn't go well. They would finish a distant 10th and lost 5 of their first 6 games and win only 1 of their last 7. Goals dried up and flooded in at the wrong end throughout, not least in a 5-1 defeat to Dinamo at Stari Plac. And manager Slavko Lističa would be dispensed with mid-season. The man taking temporary charge of the club would be the youth team manager, a man who had helped bring through many of the young players at the heart of the side, a man called Tomislav Ivic. While he would be in charge for that terrible end of season run, he would also be in charge for the end of your Hajduk's Yugoslav Cup campaign, collecting the silverware in a 2-1 win over Dinamo before relinquishing control to incoming manager Branko Zabec. In winning, he added a Yugoslav Cup to his 3 Yugoslav Youth Cup wins in the 3 prior seasons. He got on the management bug and would be back at Hajduk once Zabec left, and that final win would be the start. An Ivic-managed Hajduk side would not lose a single Yugoslav Cup game until 1979. That first Cup final win for Ivic was, however, played with controversy, and after the final, Dinamo manager Drazan Jerković would be suspended and eventually forced out of his job due to accusations made against the FA. When it came to the league, relegation was easy. Maribor and Radnički Krajevac were both detached at the bottom, and both were the equal lowest scorers in the division, with only Hajduk splitting the two when it came to goals against. But the tail of the season was, of course, at the top. Zeljestnikar and Crvena Zvezda fought a tight battle all season, highlighted by games not against each other, but against each other's rivals. Both the autumn section of the season and the season itself would be ended by Crvena Zvezda facing FK Sarajevo and Zeljestnikar facing Partizan. While Zvezda and Zeljestnikar traded wins against each other and more or less matched each other throughout the entire season, any time one side got an advantage they were pegged back, particularly in the spring, where it often seemed like one of the two would falter one week and then the other would do it the next week, unable to capitalise. It all went to the final day of the season, on which there would be plenty of entertainment even away from the top two. In Maribor, the Slovenian Eternal Derby would see its highest scoring edition ever, with a wild 6-3 win for Olympia over relegated Maribor. But the headlines would be made in Sarajevo and Belgrade, as both Zeljestnikar and Zvezda played away. It would turn out to be elementary, as Bosko Jankovic turned in likely the biggest performance of his career, scoring a hat-trick at the JNA on the way to a 4-0 win for Zeljestnikar. Zvezda won in Sarajevo also, but Jankovic's impact had done more than enough to secure the title. That period for Jankovic would also see his only 2 international caps, in both legs of the Euro 1972 quarter-final loss against the USSR. Fujin's Boskov's Yugoslavia weren't destined for the Euros, but that didn't mean they had a quiet summer, as we'll see later. When it came to European competition, Zeljestnikar would be one of those sides taking their place in the first ever edition of the UEFA Cup, which had taken over from the Fairs Cup. This first edition, however, seemed cursed. We mentioned in a previous episode that one tie was abandoned due to crowd trouble from Panionios, but it was not the only issue in this first go. Albania's first entrance, Vilasnia, would have to withdraw after being drawn against Rapid Vienna because Austria point-blank refused to allow the side into the country. In the Netherlands, tragedy occurred. Hallescher FC of East Germany had held PSV Eindhoven to a 0-0 draw in the first leg and travelled to Eindhoven with high hopes. They checked into the Hotel Silveren Schipard the night before the second leg. Early on in the morning of 28th September, a fire began, thought to originate from the hotel kitchen. The ground floor went up rapidly, and by the time the fire department got to the hotel, the entire building was overrun, with guests jumping from windows to try to escape the inferno. 9 people died in all, 2 from their falls from windows, with one Hallescher player, the 21-year-old Wolfgang Hoffmann, among the dead. The second leg was cancelled, with PSV qualifying by default, but few paid that much heed given the circumstances. Vilasnia's place, though it wasn't taken by the Albanians themselves, was one given to them, having been reallocated from Yugoslavia, leaving 3 in the tournament, Dinamo, OFK and Zvezda. All 3 made relatively short work of their first assignments. Dinamo beating Botev Avratsa of Bulgaria 8-2. Dinamo would go out in the second round on away goals, in spite of a great individual effort in the first leg from Zdenko Kafka. OFK would also ease through their first round tie against Geo Gardens. However, they would be well beaten by Carl Zeiss Jena in the second round. Which left? Zvezda. They would face a first round tie against Club Bruges and have what would look like an easy assignment after winning the first leg at Gerbovice 3-0. The Belgians would make it a close run thing, however, winning 3-1 in the second leg to put Zvezda through 4-3 to a second round tie against old friends of the podcast, Bologna. A 1-1 draw in Sarajevo didn't bode well, but that man again, Bosko Jankovic, scored to bring Zvezda from behind twice in Italy to put them through on away goals. Zvezda would then go on to face Scotland's St Johnstone. The Perth side had knocked out Vassas and Hamburg to get to face Celio and had high hopes, particularly after winning the home leg 1-0 and their scouting taking away the belief that Zvezda were a poorer side than the already vanquished Vassas. Instead, they got hammered, with Josip Bukal scoring a hat-trick on the way to a 5-2 aggregate win for the Sarajevo side. Worse almost befell the Scots on their way home. On takeoff, their plane skidded to the end of the runway, taking off barely in time and even clipping branches on takeoff. The plane immediately turned round to conduct an emergency landing. It then came in too low, clipped some branches on trees at the other end of the runway, and skidded right to the very end of the runway. They did all at least get home safely, eventually. When it came to Zvezda, they had a quarter-final date with Ferencváros. The two sides swapped 2-1 away wins, with Zvezda taking the first leg, and then taking the lead in the second to put them 3-1 up on aggregate. Ferencváros equalised almost immediately, and brought the tie equal in the 60th minute. It eventually went to penalties, and after 9 perfect penalties, Zvezda erred to allow Friday to qualify for the semis 5-4 on penalties. Sven's Zvezda would be the representatives in the Cup Winners' Cup. Across the continent, Chelsea would manage a 21-0 aggregate first-round win over Jeunesse Esch of Luxembourg. While Zvezda couldn't quite match the magnitude of that win, they were still mightily impressive in their first round tie against Komloy of Hungary, killing the tie off with a 7-2 win in the first leg. In the second round, it would be to the Netherlands to take on Sparta Rotterdam and a tight 3-2 aggregate win, courtesy of a late Zoran Antonievich goal at the Maracanã. In that second round also, a referee forgot the rules and forced Sporting Lisbon and Rangers to go to a penalty shootout, in spite of Rangers having won the tie on away goals. Embarrassingly, Sporting would win the shootout 3-0, and UEFA would be forced to overturn the win and put Rangers through. Rangers would, of course, go on to win the tournament and face the team that would knock out Zvezda in the quarterfinals, Dynamo Moscow. A 2-1 loss at the Maracanã would turn out to be fatal for their ambitions, as Dynamo qualified 3-2. Hajduk were first round losers in the European Cup, managing a 0-0 draw in Spain against Spanish champions Valencia, before drawing 1-1 at Stari Plac and exiting on away goals. The only Yugoslav player to really distinguish themselves that season would be Sylvester Tkach, now of Standard Liège, who top-scored in the tournament courtesy of a goal in each leg against Linfield, a double to knock out CSKA in Moscow, and a late penalty against Inter as the Belgians went to an away goals defeat in the quarterfinals. As indicated earlier, Yugoslavia was still a busy side in 1972, even if they didn't have the finals of Euro 1972 to go to. Instead, they were invited to the Brazil Independence Cup, a curious and competitive one-off in the international calendar. The tournament was ostensibly to celebrate the 150th year of Brazil as an independent nation, but instead it looked rather like a mini World Cup with the best of South America, France, the USSR, Scotland and Czechoslovakia attending, along with Africa and CONCACAF sending best of squads. This was very much the intention. Brazil had wanted to host the 1974 World Cup, but FIFA took the opinion that it was too close to Mexico to be practical to host a back-to-back World Cup on the same continent. So Hal Havelange decided that if he couldn't have the World Cup itself, he'd try to make the next best thing. The national team weren't even the only Yugoslav representation. Toza Veselinovic was there as manager of Colombia. It was, in many aspects, almost as complete a collection of footballing talent as could be assembled. And all of them were about to bow down to a man who, up to this point, has never been called the Fresh Prince of Belo Horizonte, but has often been called the Prince of Neretva, Dusan Bajovic. The time of Boskov prior to this had been relatively impressive, bringing in new players and getting results against the Netherlands, East Germany, and on July 18th, 1971, travelling to the other Maracanã and being the chosen opponents for Pelé's final appearance for the Brazilian national team, securing a 2-2 draw at the home of the world champions. The setback against the Soviets in the Euros quarterfinals was a setback, but the trip to Brazil was an honour and a chance to test themselves against the world's best. The tournament itself was set into three stages. The first was a five-side group stage with the group winners qualifying for a second group stage in which seeded teams would enter, such as Brazil, with second stage winners going to the final and the runners-up going to the third place playoff. Yugoslavia began against Venezuela, and Bajovic went crazy, scoring an incredible 5 in a 10-0 win over the least of the South American sides. They were placed into an entirely South American group, drawing 1-1 with Bolivia with a much-changed side. The first team came back for the trip to Manaus to play Paraguay, and Bajovic scored both in a 2-1 win, and repeated the trick 3 days later against Peru at the same venue. It put Yugoslavia into the second group against Brazil, Scotland, and the side that had done for them a decade prior in South America, Czechoslovakia. It started with the game against Scotland, and the late rescue of a draw after Martin Buchan scored an own goal in the 87th minute to level the scores. Bajovic would be the other Yugoslav scorer. Next were Brazil and Sao Paulo, and the world champions took the game 3-0, leaving Yugoslavia with a crucial game against the Czechs to see if they could get into the third place playoff. You won't get any prizes for guessing who scored. Bajovic opened the scoring, and after Hrušecki brought it level, Dragan Zajac scored the winner to take Yugoslavia to the third place game against Argentina. Both this and the final were held consecutively at the Maracanã, meaning 170,000 people were in attendance, as Bajovic doubled up once more, along with goals from Katalinski and Zajac, to win the game 4-2. Brazil, meanwhile, followed up with a late Jairzinho goal in the final minute to beat Portugal in the for the title 1-0. Boskov would last another year in the job, basically a year in which Yugoslavia would become addicted to draws. His replacement would mark the end of a dynasty. Next time on the History of Yugoslav Football podcast, we follow the man at the centre of those movements, Miljan Miljanic, as he travels from Yugoslavia to West Germany and eventually to Spain. Thank you for listening, and I'll catch you next time.